we'll bring John in about 3.
You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is
Rye the Movie Guy. And this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, in honor of Halloween, we are taking a look at our top 5 favorite Scream Queens.
I'm glad you did that with the sound effects, because I was going to do it, and I saw you pick it up. I'm like, thank God I'm off the hook. I don't have to scream.
I'm going to use that sound effect every time we say Scream Queens.
Oh, I'm sure the listeners are going to love that.
In addition to looking at the Scream Queens, we have reviews of Ben Affleck's new movie, Argo.
Sweet.
Plus, you caught a movie at the theaters.
I saw Hotel Transylvania.
Perfect
nice family
timing.
Film.
Perfect timing. In addition to that, we have DVD reviews of The Pirates, Band of Misfits, and Chico and Rita. A couple of animated films out on DVD that I caught.
Sweet.
We have an awesome guest joining us, John Otterbacher, making his return to Cinema Jaw. I believe this is his third time.
Always a pleasure to have John O on. So
yeah, and I think since the last time we had him on, I finally got around to seeing Riff Raff, because when he came on back in the Riff Raff days, I didn't see him, so I can't wait to comment about that. And he's working on a new project that we're excited about.
It's always exciting. I mean, this guy is a professor at Flashpoint Tribeca. We'll get to all that.
So, yep. And in addition
character.
To that, Matt, you are taking John on later in Ghost Movie Trivia.
Ooh, I might know a thing or two.
Plus a Cinema War that's going to be looking at a couple of horror franchises.
Nice.
So we are jam-packed, Matt.
As always, man. This is my favorite time of year. Can I just say that?
Yeah. Not to mention, Matt, we're going eye for an eye on Paranormal Activity 4.
Oh.
I mean, boy. Up to the jaw in Cinema Jaw, I tell you.
Yeah, I've seriously got a boner.
And before we bring in our guests, we got some exciting news going on for Cinema Jaw 2.
That's right. Yeah, we're doing our first ever Cinema Jaw Movie Club, and it's going to be November at the
new
400
theaters.
Yeah, our favorite booze-serving theater here in Chicago. We're going to see probably Wreck-It Ralph, but we haven't decided completely yet. Doesn't matter what we see as long as we see it together. And,
yeah, it's a little ways out, so we can't necessarily peg the movie right now. I believe
exactly.
It's actually... you were a little bit wrong on the date. It's November 7th.
Wednesday, wow, did I November already get the 7th. Date wrong? That's
but the
right.
But the best thing is, you go to our Facebook page, we already got an invitation out there, got more information on there, and as we get closer to the date, we'll even have more information, what movie, what kind of deals we can get you into the theater, and then afterwards, we're all going to come out, and we're going to jaw about the movies, we're going to have a recorder there and get everybody's opinion.
Yep, at the very least, there's going to be $5 You Call It, so if you want to upgrade from just a whiskey and Coke to a Jack and Coke, You Call It, $5.
So more to come on the Cinema Jaw Movie Club. Look for it on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, if you're in Chicago, please join us. It's going to be a nice night at the movies.
Definitely, Matt. Without further ado, we bring back a guest. He is a favorite here on Cinema Jaw, making his third appearance. He's a professor over at Flashpoint Tribeca, and he also has a new documentary that he's working on. Can't wait to hear about it. John Otterbacher, welcome back to Cinema Jaw.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. It's always a good time hanging out here at Mother's with you two and just doing this thing. It's just fun to be around movie geeks. I mean, it's my calling.
We're happy to have you again, John. It's always a fun time having you.
This is your third time on Cinema Jaw. Each time you come on, I find it very pleasurable.
Well, thank you. My students don't always feel that way about me, so it's nice that some people find me pleasurable.
So are things still going good over there at Tribeca Flashpoint?
Tribeca Flashpoint is going really, really well. We've got some big changes this year in terms of, well, just some of the projects that we're doing, some of the clients that we're working with, really good films coming out of the school. I'm really happy to say the last Indie Incubator, the top 3 films all at least had students who participated in them. They may not have been a Tribeca Flashpoint school film, but they had our students were working on them. I think the top prize went to one of our students, so
yeah,
that was very cool, you know. So I'm just excited to be a part of a school that's kind of young and fresh, and we're nimble and able to do new things and evolve with the industry.
We should mention that the Indie Incubator is the film festival that we host here at Mother's. Been hosting it for the past 5 years or so, and John's been gracious enough to be a judge for the past, what, like 2 years?
2 or 3 years, yeah. The Indie Incubator is a great time, and I think of Cinema Jaw, I think of Indie Incubator, I think of them as being, like, connected.
No, and they are.
Cool.
They are.
Yeah, so great things happening over there, no complaints, we're busy. I could always use a few extra hours in the day, but good things.
And in addition to that, it sounds like you were telling us about this new film that you're working on. And before we get there, I finally did catch Riff Raff. Matt finally gave me the copy that I think he was supposed to give me 6 months prior to. Finally gave it to me, and I watched it. Awesome film. And now I drove by the other day, me and my girlfriend watched the movie. And I swear we drove by North Avenue Beach and we were on there. And we both commented about Riff Raff. Like it was the first thing right after watching that movie. Like, oh yeah, Riff Raff.
You really can't drive down Lakeshore Drive after seeing that movie and look at it quite the same way anymore. You look out at the beach and it's transformed forever.
It's weird. Every time I go to the beach now, it's part of my experience there. I mean, Riff Raff, besides just being a fun movie, available now on iTunes and Cinema Now and Amazon.com. We got new DVDs coming out too. But, you know, it's part of my Chicago experience. I literally moved to Chicago with the plan of making Riff Raff with a good friend and partner of mine, Justin Naughton, who's also been on the show.
He was on the show with you.
Yeah. And it's part of Chicago to me now. And Chicago's North Avenue Beach was a place I used to go as a kid when I would visit Chicago with my old man. I'm not sure if he liked to watch the volleyball players or what it was, but we'd always go to North Avenue Beach. Exactly. It's a fun movie, you know. It doesn't take itself too seriously. And actually, there's a Riff Raff connection to our Scream Queens discussion later in the episode.
Ooh.
Here. So, I'm going to keep that under wraps.
I like it. Now, you're working on a documentary.
Yes.
That's looking at copyright laws, pop art. And have you done a documentary before?
Well, you know, I've worked on a number of documentary projects before, smaller ones, but this is going to be my directorial debut of any kind of film. Normally I'm a producer or a cameraman, I do editing, but mainly I'm known as a producer, and at least in the indie community around here. So this is the first feature length doc I've directed. It was something that a culture I kind of got into, and just I was compelled to start this process, you know.
And the working title is Officially Limited?
Yes.
So the film is actually looking at pop art and copyright laws, is that right?
Yeah, well, a student of mine told me I should get involved in Twitter. And Matt actually told me I should be on Twitter told me that you have to be on Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, you're not doing it right. So I got on Twitter like a year and a half ago.
At Orange Chair Productions, if you want to follow John Otterbacher, at Orange Chair Productions.
And Orange Chair TV, isn't it?
Yeah, Orange Chair TV, Orange Chair Productions. The movie actually has a website. It's officiallylimited.com. There's also officiallylimitedthemovie.com. You know, I started following these really cool screen-printed movie posters, kind of like gig posters you'd see for bands, but they were for movie screenings, and they were totally like new imaginations and new interpretations of old movies done as posters. And I saw one for Apocalypse Now. I was like, man, I got to get that thing. It's so cool. It's limited to only like 70 copies, and when I tried to buy it, I couldn't buy it. It was sold out instantly. And so I start following this culture. Some people are doing it officially. Some people are doing it less officially. It's a really, really cool, exciting scene, and copyright's something I'm passionate about.
So you were explaining this to us a little bit before we went on the air. They'll take an old movie like, say, Gremlins, and they'll do a reimagining of the story. And sometimes, like you were saying, John, it's a license thing where the directors of the movie give these guys the tip of the hat and say, please do this for us. Mm-hmm. Other times, they're sort of skirting the law and doing it unofficially. It's sort of almost like fan art, if you will, but this is the highest caliber, and it's become a whole culture.
It's really, you know, it's really, really popular. I think the gig poster scene has been big for a while. This has only come out in the last couple of years. You've got Mondo Tees. They're part of the Alamo Drafthouse movie theater chain. They're in Austin, and they're like the big dogs. And they do everything very legit, very officially. I've went down and interviewed those guys in Austin. Very cool guys. I really like the product they're kicking out. And then you've got some other groups out there. Gallery 1988's got their take on it. Spoke Art, Nakatomi, Cinema Overdrive. These guys are down in North Carolina, and they're just like fans of old B-movies.
Is Nakatomi a nod to Die Hard?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the head of Nakatomi is Tim Doyle. You know, he's been really open and talking with me about his process and his background and what he does, why he does what he does. And he does art prints. So you look at it and you say, I know that scene, I know that image, but it doesn't actually say the title of the movie in it. So it's in this kind of gray area where, do you have to license that? Is it fair use? Where do you draw the line? We've got some people using for marketing, merchandising, and then, you know, actual art. And they're all kind of blended together. And that's
it's a gray area for sure.
Definitely. Very gray, yes. And while you're making the film, who are you going to interview? Is it people in the licensing field, or is it some of these artists that are appearing in the film?
I've been lucky enough to interview a lot of high caliber people in the industry, you know, for the size of the industry. So the guys at Mondo are huge. Tim Doyle is a big name in the industry. I went up to Seattle and I got to interview Tyler Stout. And Tyler Stout, if you haven't seen his work, I strongly encourage you to check it out. Tyler's an amazing artist. Yeah, I went to Gallery 1988. I mean, Gallery 1980 is in LA, you know, in Hollywood. And these guys literally do shows where the stars come out, which is pretty crazy. They did an Avengers-themed art show, and Joss Whedon showed up there, and cast from the Avengers, and it was, you know...
Was the Incredible Hulk there? Because, like, you know... And I'm not talking about Mark Ruffalo, I mean...
He was there. Okay, he was good. All over the wall. Nice. He was everywhere on the wall. So it's a cool scene, you know, as a you know, a big pop culture and movie nerd. I just love the art. But I think there's some deeper questions here about our culture and where it's going. You know, if somebody wants to make art inspired by Star Wars, does Lucas have the right to always shut them down? And I don't know. You know, let's say Lucas,
it's
not
a great
to knock
question.
Him. He's been making money off Star Wars for like, you know, 30 some years.
35 years.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, hey man, you won. But at the same time, as a filmmaker, I appreciate wanting to have control of your property and
right.
protect it. And so I kind of see both sides of the issue. And so I'm just trying to get the public's opinion. I've talked to some legal experts. I've talked to the artists, the business people in the industry. And I'm really excited about the project. Yeah.
For sure.
And, I am too. It's awesome, man.
And speaking Thank about you. Excited, there's an event that's going to be taking place here in Chicago. Me and Matt are hoping to record at this event as well. We'll be showing a preview of the movie.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be a preview. It'll be like a little promo. I don't have the movie totally edited yet. Part of the event is to help raise money to finish post-production. The event is, I'm calling it a fundraiser awareness event. So I'd like to raise some money to help finish the film, but I also want to educate people about what the movie's about, because it's just not that big in Chicago yet. So yeah, we're doing that at Gallery F. That's in Logan Square on Milwaukee Avenue. All the info will be on the Officially Limited Facebook page and website.
And we'll have links to it, too, on CinemaJaw.com.
Definitely. It's 2 days after your event. So I'm going to come out to the CinemaJaw film event. And 2 days later, we'll have the Officially Limited fundraiser awareness. It's going to be a good week, that first week in November.
So if ours is the 7th, your event is November 9th. It's a Friday night, correct?
Yes, yes. Gallery F in Logan Square. Cool new place. And these guys, I went to Gallery F because they're the kind of the only place in town here that specializes just in screen print art. So their gallery is dedicated to that. Artists from all over the country are showing their works there. And when I say screen print art, it's not normally one piece. You know, they might do an edition of 100. But it's cool. If you get a poster and there's only 100 or 99 other ones out there, you're part of a very small club of people who appreciate and have this piece of art. Really cool stuff.
That's awesome. Cool.
I can't wait to see this movie.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, I can't wait to get it done.
I'm extremely interested in it for a number of reasons. It's awesome, man.
Yeah. For sure. And one more time for the Jawheads listening to this at home, where's the best place to find out more about the movie?
Officiallylimited.com.
John Otterbacher, always a pleasure having him here.
No,
can't wait
thanks,
for it.
Thanks, man.
Always into interesting projects, isn't he, Matt?
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah. So he is going to be sitting in the entire episode. He's got his 5 favorite Scream Queens. In addition to taking Matt on in ghost movie trivia later.
It's going to be a slaughter.
I'm going to get my butt kicked.
All right. Hey, brings us to a segment we call Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by...
The new 400, Rye.
The new 400 theaters, Matt. They have upgraded to digital projection.
I just saw my first 3D movie at the new 400 this weekend, and it was fantastic.
So in addition to that, they also have a full liquor bar and the best prices on first-run movies in all of Chicago.
Tell me more.
So check out what's playing at the new 400 theaters at their website, thenew400.com.
And we thank them for their support of CinemaJaw.
All right, Eye for an Eye this week, guys, is Paranormal Activity 4. The story takes place in 2011, 5 years after Katie killed her boyfriend, sister, her husband Daniel, and took their baby Hunter, who's now called Robbie. Story actually focuses on two new characters, Alice and her mom, who are experiencing weird stuff since the new neighbors, Katie and Robbie, moved in town. Matt,
dun, dun, dun.
Interested or ignore on Paranormal Activity 4?
You know, here's the thing. Here is the thing. I want to say ignore because, like, you know, this has just been like the schlock franchise of film, but it's the most talked about film of October. I got to, you know, as far as horror goes, interested.
John, interested or ignore on Paranormal Activity 4?
Well, this is one of those instances where my students were educating me. They were telling me about the found footage genre.
Oh,
the
no.
Found footage genre, which is not a genre when I was in film school, but now it's a genre. You know, honestly, this stuff kind of freaks me out, man. I mean, I like the old school horror movies where it was kind of fun and maybe a girl took her shirt off and we all had a good time and we saw some gore. This stuff freaks me out a little bit too much. I'm going to ignore, not because I think it's bad, but because I like to sleep at night.
Oh, wow. He's ignoring because it's too scary.
I don't know what to tell you.
I agree. That's almost a nod for the movie. I agree. I've only seen the first Paranormal Activity. And my problem with all these movies, such as Saw and the horror genre in general, is once one popular movie hits, we're doomed for another four or five of the same exact thing, change it up a little bit. But really, after that initial first scare and original idea, I never get into them after that. So I got to ignore this one.
I largely agree with you. There have been a few exceptions, and there's always good entries later on in a series, but overall, you're probably right, Rye.
Somebody else will tell us if it's good, and then maybe I'll check it out, but, you know, it's kind of like how many Final Destinations are there?
Exactly.
Too many.
So you heard it here on Cinema Jaw. Two ignores, one interested for Paranormal Activity 4. And speaking of new movies in theaters, Matt, I caught Ben Affleck's latest Argo. Matt, Ben Affleck makes it 3 for 3 on his directing efforts. In fact, Argo is his best film to date as a director. The movie is based on a true story. In 1979, with the Iranian Revolution at its peak, students and militants storm the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, taking 52 American hostages. However, 6 U.S. diplomats did escape the embassy during the raid and took refuge at the Canadian embassy. Figuring a way to get these 6 Americans out of Iran proved difficult. The idea the CIA rolled with was to send in a CIA agent, Tony Mendez, played by Ben Affleck, posing as a Canadian film producer. He would meet up with the 6 American diplomats and have them all pose as a Canadian film crew scouting locations for a new sci-fi film entitled Argo. Giving them all Canadian passports and identities, not to mention setting up the movie with a real studio, securing a budget, and having actual actors reading for parts to make the film look legit in case there was any inquiring by Iran, was all part of the plan. This is one tense ride. The kind of story that'll have you on the edge of your seat a few times. It all starts with one heck of a scary opening scene inside the embassy. From there, the story is engrossing and easy to follow. The story and the look of the film, Matt, are just perfect. We're also treated to some humor, thanks to John Goodman and Alan Arkin, who are involved in the Hollywood studio behind Argo. This, Matt, is one of the year's best films. Don't miss it. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 4 Jaws, a grade of an A-.
Yeah, I saw your tweet, man. You put the little stars in your tweet. Obviously, you really, really like this movie, huh?
You know, I remember when we covered suspense films back on the Jaw with...
It was Scott Lucas.
Scott Lucas,
our good friend from Local H.
I commented then, and I really mean it. I think when I go to the movies, my favorite genre to see in the theater when it's done right is a great suspense film. I get so into it, edge of my seat. And this is the kind where the audience is so tense that when it finally does go right for the characters, people just let out a cheer in the audience because they're so relieved for the characters on screen. The authentic look, too, of the film, the 1979-80s, is just a blast to go back to, and Affleck sort of nails that in this picture.
I thought the production design for, and I haven't seen the movie, but what I've seen in the trailers and previews and everything else looks fantastic. And teaching cinematography right now, I like the color palette that they chose for this film. It really just reminds you of that era. It takes you back to the 70s, which I think is when the film takes place. And, you know, Ben Affleck, you know, this guy just keeps cranking him out.
Who knew?
The Town, fantastic. What was his first film? That was great,
too. The first was Gone Baby Gone.
Gone Baby Gone. I mean, with his brother. I mean, this guy is he's becoming kind of a powerhouse.
Sure is.
Not just as an actor, but a legit filmmaker. Cranking him out, man.
Yep. And not only that, he's on screen in Argo, and really he's got some emotional weight on screen, too. It's like, this guy's doing it all. He's behind the camera. He's on the camera. I never would have thought this from Ben Affleck, but Argo was just quite sensational.
He's proved us all wrong, Ryan. He has all his naysayers.
Well, definitely check this one out.
And you know, traditionally, you never want directors to be on camera because it takes them away from directing. And the fact that he's able to do both just tells me that he's really honed his craft. You know, his experience as an actor and as a screenwriter. I mean, he's taken it to the next level. I'm impressed.
And for you Breaking Bad fans out there, Bryan Cranston's also in the film. Great supporting role as well. It's just all in all, I loved it. Real crowd pleaser. Four Jaws, great of an A- for Argo. Matt, you caught Transylvania Hotel
Transylvania.
Tell us about it.
All right, so this is the new animation. Our good friend Adam Sandler plays Dracula. You got the Wolfman, played by Steve Buscemi. The Invisible Man, all the classics, Frankenstein, etc., etc. They've built this hotel where monsters can be safe from persecution by humans. And wouldn't you know it, a human young man shows up at this castle hotel where all the monsters are vacationing, and Dracula has to hide his presence from the other monsters lest they think his hotel is second rate, you know? So he goes through all the shenanigans of hiding him, and they all the monsters come to love this guy who's disguised as a monster, this Johnny human character. And Dracula also turns out has a young daughter.
I see where this is going.
Right. Yeah, you see where this is going. I saw it in 3D at the new 400, as I mentioned, and the visuals just popped right out of the screen, literally. I mean, obviously in 3D, but the bright colors, it just came out at you in a way that wasn't overwhelming, so I really enjoyed the 3D aspect of it. The monsters are done with just that touch of scariness to make it cool enough, but also cute enough for a family audience. So you didn't feel like you can't bring a 5-year-old kid to this. You absolutely can. It's the classic Universal monsters: Frank, Drac, the Mummy, the Wolfman, the Invisible Man.
Right up your alley, Matt.
Oh, this is it's a great tribute to monster movies of old while still feeling modern enough with those actors, bringing some up-to-date humor to it. Enough really cool and sly adult humor to keep me entertained, but my kid loved all the stupid fart jokes, of which there were plenty.
Adam Sandler movie, sure.
Adam Sandler does an original song in it, which I thought was really well done. The animation is beautiful. This is a 3.5 jaw movie all the way. If you have little kids, it's 3.5. If you're going solo as an adult, it's a 3 jaw. Definitely a great family movie for Halloween time.
Nice.
Yeah, you're getting me excited about this new 400, man. I'm looking for a place to do some screenings with some posters to go with the documentary. It sounds like you're digging this theater.
It's the Cinema Jaws official theater, and they're really cool. Yeah, I'll definitely give you the card.
And it's a neighborhood spot, you know, yeah. So definitely.
Well, I've heard about it, but sure. I haven't been up there yet.
Well, now that they got the you know, it was always cool. They showed 35mm films for a long time. They held on to that.
Yeah, you got to.
Yeah, I agree, but maybe they held on to it a bit too long, so I was very excited when they made the change to digital, because now they have, you know, their movies just pop. Okay. You don't have to worry about scratches on the film and stuff, and it's a lot better now. New seats, new everything.
Oh, I'll definitely have to check it out. So, this sounds like an animated, was it Transylvania 65,000? Do you remember that movie from the 80s?
Yeah, I do remember
Michael
that.
Michael Richards in there, I believe. Kramer. Yeah.
It's absolutely nothing like Transylvania 65,000.
What about Monster Squad?
Again, probably not, because Monster Squad was more like they were hunting the monsters. Here, the monsters are the heroes of the film.
All right.
So
I'm trying to relate. I'm trying.
Matt, were there any Scream Queens? What do we call them?
Scream Queens.
Scream Queens.
Have we got any on there?
Well, yeah. I mean, I would have to say Dracula's daughter, who is... a strangely attractive young woman.
Oh, this is getting bizarre.
Yeah, I'm just gonna cut it off there.
It is our topic this week, Scream Queens, and we each got our top five, and I'm going to go first because I am extremely weak in this genre. I'm not a humongous horror film fan. I've said this many a times on the jaw. I hope Matt can dig up some good Scream Queens.
Are we going to rotate around?
We are.
As always.
We are.
Yes.
I'm going to start. Right, I'm going to start because I'm sure my list is the weakest. In fact, my first two that I list...
You are the weakest link.
My first two that I list are actually only in, I believe, one horror film each, but I picked them because I thought maybe if they were listening, they would realize how good I thought their performances were, and they should do a couple more horror films. And at number five, I actually have Jessica Biel.
Yeah.
Okay, Jessica Biel's in my notes.
All right, so she's in the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is probably your best as far as when you're calling a Scream Queen. She's in the Blade Trinity. She's also, in a nod to a horror classic, is in the upcoming Hitchcock film. Should note that.
Definitely.
But again, this is an actress where I thought she fit in the horror genre. I liked her in the remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I thought, here, go and do that, because I don't like her in a lot of other stuff. So in the horror genre, I could see her and I could cheer for her. Well, that's why I put her at number five.
Actresses who are very attractive and don't act that well tend to do well in the horror genre. I could see Jessica Biel doing some more horror films.
That's why she's sitting at number five on my list.
I think Jessica Biel might just have a good role in her yet.
I can see it. You know, she hangs out with some cool people. But she does cool things.
Definitely attractive.
Very attractive. Yeah, she's definitely as attractive. And she was on my list of like, you know, who's done recently a horror movie. She's not in my top five, but okay. she made the, you know, the notes section anyways.
Who do you got at five, John?
Man, this is really tough. I'll be honest. I had a really hard time with this. You know, this is a really hard thing to come up with five. I've got five really good candidates. And can I group some people together?
Sure.
Is that okay?
I guess, as long as you're not stealing any from us just because you're grouping.
I don't think so, but this is just a nod to what I was a fan of maybe 15, 20 years ago. It's a little embarrassing.
Oh, boy.
But I'm going to throw, and these two, they starred on a TV show together, which
they,
I liked.
They have to be together, yeah.
Yes, they starred on a TV show together, which I liked. Nev Campbell and Jennifer Love Hewitt. Now, they weren't in the same movies as Scream Queens, but obviously Jennifer Love Hewitt, I Know What You Did Last Summer, and Neve Campbell, star of the Scream films, you know, they transferred from TV right into this kind of like, I want to say it's almost like bubblegum horror films, right? Not super gory, not super scary, but there was some screaming and there were some killers and it was fun. They both kind of did it at the
bubblegum
same time.
Bubblegum horror, yeah.
Bubblegum horror.
That's a good term.
Is that cool?
Yeah, definitely. And I have Neve Campbell on my list coming up here.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's fine.
I think she's a little bit stronger than Jennifer Love Hewitt's. As far as those movies anyways, the Scream movies compared to the I Know What You Did Last Summer films.
Probably. Jennifer Love Hewitt's more attractive than Neve Campbell, and Neve Campbell can act better. And again, the horror genre, your level of attractiveness is very important.
Yes.
Just being honest, this is the horror genre.
Yes. Matt?
I agree. Hey, before I give my number five, I just wanted to mention it was Selena Gomez as Drax's daughter.
Ah.
And I cannot not mention John Lovitz and David Spade were also doing some voice acting in Hotel Transylvania. But my number five is, actually, I'm throwing you a curve right out of the gate. When you talk about Scream Queens, like you were saying, John, you think about girls. And doing the research, when I see the pictures of these women, almost none of them were wearing a shirt. It was either a bra or a bikini.
A tank top.
Or they're just
wet.
Their hands.
Yeah. we might look to the same list.
Probably. But this person was not wearing a shirt, and maybe that's a good thing. You know, it's Kathy Bates.
Really?
Yes. You cannot talk about horror and not mention Kathy Bates.
Yeah, but she's not necessarily a Scream Queen.
Okay, maybe it's a curveball. That's why she's at number five.
When does she scream?
Oh, she screams when she's getting killed.
She makes other people scream.
She does. That's true. Female in horror. Therefore, I think she qualifies as a Scream Queen. This is my list. I'm making it. I'm putting Kathy Bates on it.
Do your thing.
Right out of the gates, Misery. This is an Oscar. An
Oscar-winning
performance.
You always got to throw a curve and get everybody all riled up right off the bat.
This is like when you guys yelled at me when I said Jaws was a beach movie.
I know you just want to see Kathy Bates with her shirt off, John.
Oh, I mean, yes.
You dirty birdie.
She's very, very, I'm sure she's very attractive older
woman. All right, so Matt's got Kathy Bates at number five.
Oh, and well-deserved on this list.
We swing it into our fours, and at number four, another one that only starred in one horror film. I think she needs to do more. This film came out in 2008. The movie is The Strangers. I'm speaking of Liv Tyler. Have you seen The Strangers?
I have seen The Strangers, and it did not even cross my mind in this list. I like Liv Tyler. The Strangers was interesting, and yeah.
This was one that finally got under my skin a little bit, and I was actually scared watching, which I have a tough time with horror films.
I like to go out in the woods and spend time in a cabin in Michigan. I do it quite regularly, actually, and it weirded me out.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that these guys are just going to come and harass the house,
like,
and they're not
like
going to give
up. The home invasion sort of thing. It's so scary.
And so many times with these lists of actresses, it's the vulnerable girl home alone or in that kind of setting where it's like, oh, boy. And Liv Tyler just was perfect. You know, she had a little toughness to her, but had the great scream constantly, forgot her cell phone, did the dumb things that she didn't want her to do, and so forth. Don't run out of the house, yet she does and tries to make a run for the random shed. But all the while, you're cheering her on. But I love The Strangers. I think Liv Tyler needs to do a few more horror films, because I don't think she's all that great of an actress where I'd go see her in anything else that, you know, she didn't fall into, like Lord of the Rings, perhaps.
But Armageddon, man. Oh, always puts a tear in my eye. Come on now. Yeah. We have kids, man.
Well, you know, she was great in Lord of the Rings as, you know, Elwynn, the princess of the elves. I thought she was serviceable, at least.
Spoke an elvish tongue and shot bow and arrow occasionally.
She cried the tear on Frodo, which healed him and all that good stuff.
Armageddon. Anyways.
That was my number four, Liv Tyler. What do you got sitting there, John?
Oh, number four. See, these lists are always really hard for me. I always have like 50 names in front of me. I'll be honest.
You got to pick them, man.
I'm gonna throw this out there. It kind of goes along with your Liv Tyler, I think. I'm gonna say Naomi Watts in The Ring.
Oh yeah.
I mean, this is she
also on my list. This is
a solid pick.
She does not do a lot of horror films, but I'm gonna say that she may be the best actress on my list. And maybe not the best scream queen, but the best actress on my list. And The Ring creeped me out. A friend of mine was in The Ring as well. So I've got like a place in my heart for this film. But that's a creep. One of the best adaptations of a Japanese horror film. And she killed it.
It's really the movie that I couldn't agree more either. It's really the movie that brought Japanese horror to the forefront of the American imagination. I mean, before this, it just wasn't there except for a few, like, deep-cut aficionados.
Was this before or after The Grudge?
It was before
I can't
The
remember.
Grudge.
Yeah, and this is
right
better
before.
Than The Grudge.
It paved the way to... Well, I agree. I think The Grudge was great, too, but it paved the road for more Japanese horror, which was doing new things, at least at the time, in the early part of the last decade.
And I should mention, she's number three on my list, which we're going to be coming to anyway. She's in The Ring 1 and 2. But get a load of this, and I just caught this on TV. I think on Sunday night we have This TV in Chicago, which is part of like the U. Mm-hmm. And they were showing scary movies on Sunday night. She's actually in Children of the Corn 4. And I was sitting there, I was watching it, and I'm like, oh, what is this? I look, Children of the Corn 4. Next thing I know, there's Naomi Watts, a young Naomi Watts in
the film. Correct me if I'm wrong, but she was the female lead in King Kong, right?
She was also, yes, Peter Jackson's King Kong.
It's a classic horror movie, yeah.
Sure.
Is it a horror? I guess it is a horror movie.
I would say, especially with the giant bugs and stuff.
Well, Peter Jackson's,
it's a monster movie.
And she's screaming in it.
She is.
She's definitely screaming in it. All right.
Well done,
maybe
John.
I should have bumped her up on my list. She was Rye over here.
Yeah, for sure. Great pick. Matt, what do you got sitting at number four?
At number four, I have an actress who I'm absolutely in love with. I've loved her since her days on Becker. She was in... I know.
Oh, right? Boy, here he goes.
The last great American sitcom.
Becker.
I know. But she was in The Blob back in 88, which was directed by Frank Darabont of the Shawshank Redemption fame and amongst other great films. I'm talking about Shawnee Smith, most notable as a scream queen for her role in the movie Saw. She was in the original Saw and just about all the sequels. She's also one of the hosts of the TV show Scream Queens, where she's one of the celebrity judges.
Really?
True, the reality show, Scream Queens.
How do you get to be in more than one Saw?
Don't they
cut you up into pieces and kill you?
So the jigsaw killer puts you in a death trap, which is related to your own mortal sin, if you will, and you have the ability to get out of this if you give up whatever your addiction or affliction is.
I don't like it.
Yeah, well, anyway.
It scares me.
So she survived the first one, and she credited the jigsaw killer with getting her off of drugs and cleaning her up and changing her life. So then she seeks out the jigsaw. The jigsaw and her become friends, and she becomes his protege.
These sound horrible after the first one.
Because he's dying of cancer, so she has to sort of take on the mantle of the jigsaw.
I saw at least two of these, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
She becomes the villain in the franchise.
Spoiler alert.
Wow.
No, that's just the second film. I'm not spoiling anything.
Wow, all right.
This is like already 10
years
old.
I think I've
only
seen the first two.
Yeah, I think I stopped it, too, and I don't remember.
I've seen at least four of them.
Nice pick, Matt.
Yeah.
She's up there.
Swings us into our threes, and at number three, already mentioned, I have Naomi Watts. Like we said, The Ring, one of the scariest. I love it, so I had to put her on the list, and I agree with what you said, John. Probably the best actress on my list.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
So that was my number three, Naomi Watts. John, what do you got sitting there?
Number three. All right, see, I'll be honest. I've got my list here, and I'm kind of calling them as we're talking about it. And at number three, I'm going to drop in Sherry Moon Zombie. She's the most, definitely the most modern scream queen I've got. She's married to Rob Zombie.
Well, right there.
I mean, hello. I mean, that she's got to be screaming all the time just off that. You know, she was in the remakes of Halloween, both of them. And then what was his first one that he did? The first Rob Zombie horror flick. What was it called?
It was House of a Thousand Corpses.
Oh, House of a Thousand Corpses. And
which is,
she
you
is,
know what? Almost a complete ripoff of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
And then The Devil's Rejects. I mean, she is so hot and yet so, like, crazy and scary. It's you know, it's nuts. She's a great combination. She's, like, classic yet probably the most modern of the Scream Queens on my list. And I don't really dig those movies, but I dig her work. I really do. I think she fits the mold.
Nice pick, Matt.
You ready for mine?
Yeah. What do you got sitting at number three?
My number three, okay, so there's a few extremely iconic female protagonists.
Oh, we're going to, my number two is like three of them put together.
Okay. Well, we'll see if I get there. There's a few extremely iconic female protagonists in horror, okay? After Laurie Strode, really, who's the best one? It's Nancy from Nightmare on Elm Street, Nancy Thompson. And I'm talking about Heather Langenkamp. Basically, she was in a few other horror movies as well, but largely her role as Nancy in Nightmare on Elm Street has stuck with me for all these years. She's the girl that got away from Freddy Krueger. She faced him again in Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors, and then she played herself in The New Nightmare from Wes Craven, and she's done a few other horror-ish movies, but really, it's that initial role as Nancy facing down the first time we ever see Freddy Krueger.
Oh, Nancy, sure. Man. Iconic.
I mean, and speaking of movie posters, absolutely. Speaking of movie posters, though, you cannot forget that picture of the girl in the bed with her covers pulled up to her chin and that claw just draping down over her forehead.
That's amazing. You know what? One of the most iconic, or not, well, it's not iconic because most people haven't seen it, but one of the coolest of these new generation of movie posters, this artist named Iron Jaden or Jay Shaw, he did a poster for Nightmare on Elm Street, and it's sheets. All you see is sheets. But Freddy's face is pushing through the sheets,
and
so the sheets are hanging over his face, and it is creepy and photorealistic and so cool. Pretty sure that was from Mondo Tees, and it was official, and it's a very cool poster, very hard to find. So I love your pick, though, man. Great pick.
Nice pick.
She has to be on this list.
Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah. Whew.
The jackbag redeems himself.
It didn't take long.
All right. Swings us into our number twos. At number two, I had Neve Campbell sitting there, but I'll join another actress in the Scream movie with her. Neve Campbell, and how about Rose McGowan?
Needs to be mentioned. Yes. Needs to be mentioned.
Because she's creepy.
Yes. A, she's creepy. B, she has a fantastic death scene in Scream where she dies in the garage door. She also appears in the Grindhouse films, Planet Terror and Death Proof.
With a machine gun leg. I mean, that's
awesome. A lot of fun. So I will join Rose McGowan in with my Neve Campbell pick at number two.
I love it.
What do we got sitting there, Jen?
This is really hard for me, and I just want to apologize to this person up front. Linnea Quigley, I love you, but you're number two on my list. So Linnea Quigley, she was in Night of the Living Dead. So she's rated, if you look out there on lists, she's rated as like one of the best screamers of the Scream Queen generation. Night of the Living Dead was this movie from the 80s with zombies and punk rock and graveyard.
That's Return of the Living Dead, John.
Thank you, Matt. Yes, Return of the Living Dead. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Return of the Living Dead. Night of the Living Dead is a favorite of mine, black and white. Return of the Living Dead. It's punk rock. It's in a graveyard. It's zombies. And Linnea Quigley does a very kind of erotic dance. And then she's the first topless zombie, I think.
Yes.
Wow.
Or one of the first topless
zombies. This
should
be noted, definitely.
Yeah. And Linnea Quigley, she's the Riff Raff
connection. Let's go ahead and give her that distinction. All right? We could be wrong, but yeah, I think so.
Right.
She's certainly the most notable first.
You know what? Night of the Living Dead might have a topless zombie, too.
I don't think so. In the 60s, black and white, highly doubtful.
All right. So Linnea Quigley is Cousin Julie in Riff Raff. So she was connected through one of our producers, and she came out, and she was in Riff Raff, and she told me she was a Scream Queen, and I said, Scream Queen? I said, what movies were you in? She tells me Return of the Living Dead. And I worked with James Karen, who's also in Night of the Living Dead, and I know James, and he's a wonderful guy, and both of these people are great actors. Both of them in Return of the Living Dead. Had to give a shout-out to both of them. I love the movie. Just 80s fun.
Nice.
That is, I wish I could have been there like for that conversation. Like, oh, really? What movie were you in? Just so you might have heard of it. It's just Return of the Living Dead.
And I was like, oh, yeah, you know Jimmy? And she was like, yeah, James is great. I love James Karen. It was like, yeah, and I'd worked with it. It was just a weird, one of those weird coincidences. Very cool. And yeah, Linnea Quigley, I'll tell you what, one of the nicest women on set. Just true professional. I looked her up on IMDb today. She has 119 credits on IMDb. Wow. She is working this year in like three or four different movies. This lady is busy. Yeah.
Workaholic.
I'll tell you.
Nice pick, John. Matt, what do you got sitting at two?
At number two, I have one of my absolute favorite actresses for all creation, for all time. Okay?
Oh, jeez. Oh,
this is speaking of our good friend Scott Lucas from Local H, they named an album after this woman. And I'm talking about PJ Souls. Whatever happened to PJ Souls?
PJ Souls.
I mean, she right away, Rock and Roll High School, not a Scream Queen role. But I loved her from Rock and Roll High School on, and she can never do wrong in my book. But she is also famous from the Scream Queen perspective for her roles in Halloween, where she played Laurie Strode's best friend Linda, and is the last character killed by Michael Myers in that film. And of course, it's one of the most famous scenes in the movie where Michael Myers is under the sheets and he's got the glasses on, and she pulls out her boobs and she's like, see anything you like? Yeah. And he strangles her with a phone cord. So there you got that. She was also in Carrie. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys remember this little film with Sissy Spacek.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, plug it up. She was one of Carrie's tormentors. So she met her end in the prom scene, of course, where she actually ruptured her eardrum with that fire hose scene. She got injured in real life.
Wow.
She's done a few other horror things, but...
Bloodbath,
thank you. Those three are mostly what she's known for.
Well done, Matt.
Oh, PJ
I love
Souls
that era.
Is...
I love that era of horror films. That's the era of horror films that I love.
Yeah, I agree. And I know exactly what Scott Lucas was saying when he said, whatever happened to PJ Souls, because we don't get that anymore, you know?
It's gone. We do not.
It sort of evaporated.
Swings us into our number ones, and I'm glad John did not ruin my number one. He was ruining everybody else on my list. At number one,
it's
the absolute classic. I'm speaking of, you mentioned Halloween already, Matt. I'm speaking of Jamie Lee Curtis herself.
Yeah. It's a good call.
It's
probably
the easy one.
Us.
It had to be done.
It's a layup, right? I mean, she was in Halloween 2. Let's not forget she was in The Fog.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
She was in Halloween H2O and also a prom night.
Prom
and
night.
Halloween Resurrection.
Yeah. 20 years later, right?
And it's so funny, like, looking back at those early Halloween movies at a young Jamie Lee Curtis, to think that she was this great scream queen at one time. Now I could never look at her and think like, oh, I'd be worried if she was going to die on screen. I would hope she would die on screen nowadays.
Oh, just mean.
But back then, oh boy, you really cheered for her, and that's what it's all about, the scream queen, and well, she was the epitome of it.
I love the Halloween movie. I mean, that Halloween is one of those underrated movies. I show this movie in cinematography class. We talk about the colors. We talk about the use of Steadicam.
Which I think they pioneered.
They did. That's
John Carpenter.
That movie is... Oh, and the soundtrack to that film. You know, amazing. That's a great flick. Halloween, sure. Very underrated. I mean, I know not among the horror guys, but overall, that's a milestone for me, at least. So
absolutely. So my number one, Jamie Lee Curtis. What do you got sitting there, John?
Well,
number one.
I'll be honest, and check this out. My number one, I was going to do a triple. I was going to do
a triple Lindy?
The triple Lindy.
You got to make sure you do the armpit fart before
I was
going
to group three people together, and let me just explain how I was going to do that. I was going to take PJ Souls.
Oh, wow.
From Halloween. I shit you not, on my list, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Halloween.
And then here's the twist. So number one for me is going to be Janet Leigh. From Psycho. That would be Jamie Lee Curtis's mother.
That's
from
right.
Psycho.
Yes, you're right.
And a triple Lindy.
That is the triple Lindy.
And you guys set it up for me perfectly. Thank you very much. Psycho, one of the best just movies of all time. Forget about Scream movies, horror movies. This is Hitchcock at his best. I mean, Vertigo is a masterpiece. I'm not trying to take anything away from Vertigo, but Psycho is just, everybody knows Psycho. Janet Leigh was fantastic. That scene in the shower, I mean, her screams, you don't see, You don't see her getting cut. You don't see any of the physical violence like you do nowadays. But her scream and the expression on her face sells the horror of that moment. And it's
even more horrific than seeing the actual
it's amazing.
Violence. The shower scene is absolutely the quintessential like slasher death scene. It really busts open the entire genre.
It did. It's the beginning of everything we see now. It's the the ground floor.
Yes, Eli Roth should kneel at the altar.
Couple of great picks here at our number ones. Matt, you got your number one left. Don't ruin it here, you jadbag.
No. I won't ruin it, Ryan. Don't forget, dude, that this is my freaking genre, okay?
I know.
There is one woman...
He's getting a little protective about it. Well, he's like guarding his territory over here. He's like, this is mine.
We're not talking about like indie foo-foo movies here, Ryan.
Well, I thought your shit was animation.
Oh, yeah, I like animation, too.
All right.
Like anything that has good taste
you
attached.
Tough crowd.
It's empty. Okay, so you're talking about Scream Queens. You cannot leave this person off the list. She's absolutely gorgeous and vivacious, but the first time we met her, she was but a babe. And I'm talking, and when I say babe, I mean a child. I'm talking about Linda Blair. Of course, we met her as Reagan in The Exorcist.
Good pick.
And Jesus Christ, did that role not scare the crap out of you? To this day, when I see her play Reagan in The Exorcist, which is, what, a 40-year-old movie at this point?
Scary as hell.
I had it on the TV just 3 or 4 days ago. Or not three or four weeks ago. My father pulls it up. I'll tell you this. My father turned 70 this year. He pulled up this movie. He'd been taping it, as he calls it, using his DVR to tape things. He pulled up Exorcist on his tape box. He was like, this movie scared me then, and it still scares me now. You want to watch it? And I was like, no, not really, man. It's late at night. This is going to freak me out. Exorcist is still terrifying.
Yes.
And Linda Blair was just creepy.
Yeah.
Did she scream a lot in it? Well, she was puking and spinning and doing all types of nasty stuff.
Lick me. Lick me.
You're freaking me out. Just back up a little bit.
All right. I'll
now she went on to other horror highlights.
So one of my favorites is Hell Night right away. I mean, 1981. She did the parody Repossessed of Sorceress. She had a role in Scream. It was a cameo, but she was there. Night Force, Terror in the Isles.
I do not know one movie that you were mentioning. Wait. Chained Heat? I know Chained Heat.
Chained Heat, you know. You got to know Hell Night, dude. That is a classic.
It's a biker movie?
No. It's like a Halloween scary movie.
No, I don't know. They get trapped in
a haunted house kind
of
thing.
I got to put this on my list of movies to not watch so I won't be scared at night.
You know what? If you watch one of her movies, watch The Savage Streets, where she plays a vigilante. It almost came up in our last episode. A couple episodes ago, we were talking vigilantes.
I like vigilante movies.
It was one of my honorables. It was one of my honorables, but I swept over it pretty quickly. It is a really scary movie. She's walking around with a crossbow. Linda Blair played in some pretty serious exploitation and horror movies after The Exorcist, and she's hugely respected in horror. I mean,
hugely respected. Nice pick.
Yeah, I like it. I looked at her, and I just didn't... No, but you made every argument for her.
There's really only one person that could top Jamie Lee Curtis, and it's Linda Blair. Sorry, guys.
Wow. Hey, Jawheads, listen to this at home. If we missed one of your favorite Scream Queens and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. Let us know what we missed. When we come back, we got a Cinema War that's going to look at Friday the 13th versus Halloween franchise, plus John versus Matt in Ghost movie trivia. Ghost in quotes. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Rolling. Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. Concerning the film Psycho, Alfred Hitchcock bought the rights to the novel anonymously from Robert Block for only $9,000. Then he bought up as many copies of the novel as he could to keep the ending a secret. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact. Douche.
And we are back on CinemaJaw hanging out with John Otterbacher. He's got a new film coming out, Officially Limited.
I'm just going to throw out there, Officially Limited is one of those things where you think about the artist, and if you're working for a company that you have to do officially license stuff for, you're officially limited by what everybody else has to say about your art, and they can make you change it, which is kind of an interesting twist on the officially limited. Originally, it was just officially licensed, limited edition. Then I said, wow, some of these guys are like officially limited. They have so many people getting their hands in their artwork that they can actually change it.
Interesting.
It's a lot of different meanings to the title.
Yes.
I like it. John's hanging out this whole episode with us, and it brings us to a segment we call
Cinema War.
And War. Cinema War works like this for the Jawheads listening at home. This is where me and Matt bet on a topic each week, going head to head. And our guest this week, John Otterbacher, gets to play judge and jury and tell the Jawheads listening at home who won today's Cinema War. And it's very important, John, because me and Matt are vying for 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want.
I take it very seriously.
Now, it is Halloween, and so we decided to go with Halloween-themed Cinema War topic. Reno, tell the Jawheads listening at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic: which horror franchise would you rather get stuck in, Halloween or Friday the 13th? Rye, you'll be fighting for Halloween. Matt, you'll be fighting for Friday the 13th. Let the cinema war begin.
Matt, the best thing about being stuck in the Halloween series is you get to hang out with good-looking babysitters. And you only have to worry about Michael Myers coming around once a year. This is an easy series, and that's one that I want to be stuck in.
Good-looking babysitters aside, I think the chicks in Friday the 13th series actually got topless. It's way easier to survive in a Friday the 13th movie. All you have to do is walk carefully at a brisk pace, and you're fine.
Hey, Matt, I'm a quick guy, and I can outrun Michael Myers, all the while jamming out to a much superior soundtrack. I mean, who does not love the Halloween music?
Michael Myers is pure evil, Rye. Pure evil! Jason Voorhees is retarded, and I'm not even being politically incorrect here. He was literally a retarded zombie. So basically, he's as easy to get away from as it gets. Myers is a smart stalker type using disguises and subterfuge to stalk his victims. You're going to die in Halloween.
Oh, jeez. Let me tell you, Matt. In Halloween, the main character, Laurie, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, always survives. This is my kind of series. If Jamie Lee Curtis could survive all those damn movies, I definitely could survive.
She didn't survive them all, Rye. She met her end in Halloween H2O, as a matter of fact. To survive a horror movie, all you have to do is not have sex, smoke pot, or be teenaged. In Friday the 13th, this is especially true, but in Halloween, Michael Myers even kills the dog. I mean, how do you deal with that? A guy who even kills the dog.
Oh, jeez. Matt, in the Halloween series, it always has candy from the trick-or-treaters, so I'm happy there. Plus, I get to dress up in a different Halloween costume each episode. But the best part is, I get to witness Michael Myers kill people, and he is much more creative about his work. Give me the Halloween series any day of the week.
Hang on.
Even if it is Friday the 13th.
Wait a second. I have to take issue with that. Jason Voorhees is way more creative with his kills. I mean, this is a guy who put a woman's face in liquid nitrogen and then shattered her head. Did Michael Myers ever do that? I don't think so. He also, I mean, Jesus, he would wrap people in sleeping bags and whack them against trees, stab two people at a time with a giant spear through the bottom of the bed. And you know what? While he might be a lumbering fool who doesn't bend his knees, Michael Myers steals cars, and he's way more dangerous than Jason. Go to Friday the 13th because you're going to survive, and the chicks take their tops off.
Whew, this was a tough cinema war.
Wow.
John, we throw it over to you. Me and Matt button heads. What'd you think?
It's a tough one.
I'm I'm stunned. I'm speechless. I'm thinking about how I want to be in neither of them, really. Halloween, you know, Halloween, it just, to me, is like the quintessential horror movie. It's so important in the genre and everything else. You got Friday the 13th, you got the camp, you've got, yeah, I'll be more PC. There's something wrong with him, and he just keeps coming back,
even though he's dead. That's not un-PC. He was retarded. That's not a PC term, is it?
What he said, I don't know, maybe. I don't want to offend anybody, but regardless, I'm getting confused here. Which one would I survive in, or which one is cooler?
Well, obviously, the one that would be cooler is the one that you want to survive in, too, because you'd be stuck in one of these franchises.
So the survive.
I got a soft spot in my heart for camps, man. I like camps. There's always a way to escape. There's counselors around. This dude doesn't seem all that sharp. I got to go Friday the 13th.
Wow.
I'm sorry, Rye. Halloween, much scarier to me. Friday the 13th, I think I can outsmart that.
Matt, you ruined my two-week winning streak here.
Yeah, it wasn't hard, Rye.
You earned 20 seconds to rant and rave on whatever you want. Knock your socks off.
Oh, jeez. All right, it's Halloween time, and here we go again with Paranormal Activity 5 and Saw 16. Let's start some new franchises. I don't mind having a few sequels. 1, 2, 3. Hey, if it's going well, maybe even a 4. Let's cut it off at 5. That's the new rule. 4 at the most.
Hey, well done, Matt.
You know, we didn't even talk about Sleepaway Camp this episode. You guys know Sleepaway Camp?
We gotta
save it for
yes.
another episode.
Oh, disturbing. Disturbing. But it's
great
another
movie.
Episode, I'm sorry. But Sleepaway Camp, disturbing.
Before we get to ghost movie trivia, really quick, 2 animated movies out on DVD. The first one, The Pirates, Band of Misfits from Aardman Studios, the people behind Wallace and Gromit. We're big fans, aren't we, Matt?
Oh, very much so.
Comes the latest claymation tale of pirates. The story is fun. Pirate Captain, voiced by Hugh Grant, is trying hard to win Pirate of
hard.
The Year.
Very hard.
And his adventure to do so kicks off in high gear when he meets Charles Darwin, who makes a discovery on his ship.
Darwin.
The
Go
claymation
on.
Is the star here, Matt. The movie is a joy to watch on screen. The humor is more on the witty side, unlike the computer animated pop culture references we are normally seeing nowadays with animated films. This is a movie for the whole family. Give it a spin. Ride the Movie Guy's great. 3 Jaws here for Pirates Band of Misfits.
And if I'm not mistaken, this is from Nick Park.
He's on a roll. He's on a roll.
I know.
Wow.
Nick Park from Wallace and Gromit. Sure. He's an amazing claymator.
Sure. One other one, Chico and Rita, which was nominated for Animated Movie of the Year at the past Oscars. Adult animation noir, something we do not see enough of. The look of the movie is flat out gorgeous. The story is set in the 1950s Cuba and then jumps over to New York. Chico and Rita are in love, but that can be a complicated thing, Matt, and it takes a long time to figure out. If you love animation, do not miss this one. 3.5 Jaws for Chico and Rita. Give it a spin. It was just beautiful to behold.
I love animation for adults. So.
And it's got beautiful music. They're in jazz clubs. I mean, it's awesome.
Cool. I'm in.
Brings us to trivia. Matt versus John in ghost movie trivia. Notice the ghost is in quotes.
Uh-oh.
Works like this. We go back and forth. There are steals if the person doesn't know it. And if you get stuck on one, our producer, Steve Mrazek, as we call him, Reno, has a rescue for you. All you got to do is say, rescue me, Reno. And a new rule is, if he does give you a clue that helps you out, you must say thank you, Reno. Fair enough?
You got to thank the man. Yeah,
sounds good. Yeah.
Sure. That's a
Reno's
fair rule.
A good guy.
John, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first.
You know... I'll go first. Let's do this.
All right. Question number one over to John in ghost movie trivia. In 2007, Nick Cage and Eva Mendes starred in this film about a stunt motorcyclist.
You want the name of the film?
Yes.
Oh, Ghost Rider.
Ghost movie trivia. Wonderful. 1-0, John. Question number two over to Matt.
Well done, sir.
Ricky Gervais, Greg Kinnear, and Tia Leone starred in this 2008 comedy in which Gervais could speak to the dead. Wait.
Ghost Rider?
What was your answer?
Ghost Rider.
There is a chance for a steal here.
Do you know this one?
Is there a negative? Is there like a negative effect if I answer wrong?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Sure. Now, I'll give you the question again. Ricky Gervais, Greg Kinnear, Tia Leone starred in this 2008 comedy.
I've actually watched part of this, and to say it's a comedy is a bit of a stretch.
It's that bad?
Oh, it's not good. And I'm going to say a name, I'm going to say a title, and I think it's wrong, because I know another film named Ghost World
that's real.
And
you do have a lifeline you could use here, too. No, you could say Rescue Marino. If you wanted to.
How many of these do I have?
You only have one rescue.
How many
but
questions?
There's only 8 questions.
Oh, Rescue Me Reno.
Wow, Rescue Me Reno question number 2. What was the name of that Ricky Gervais film?
And your clue is Empty City.
Empty City. Now we're playing ghost movie trivia, John.
Can I steal it?
No.
No, you can't steal it back.
Empty City. We are playing ghost movie trivia.
This is wrong, but I mean, that's Ghost City?
Ghost Town? It's gotta Ghost be Ghost Town. Town.
It was Ghost Town. So close.
I've watched part of this movie. Not funny. I'm not surprised Matt didn't know it. I'm a little bummed that was my suggestion. I'm going to say thank you, Reno, but come on. Come on.
All right. It's still 1-0, John. Question number 3 is over to John. In 2001's Ghost World, Enid and Rebecca are two social outsiders who play a prank on a middle-aged geek. Enid was played by Thora Birch. Who played her friend Rebecca in the movie? Have you seen the film, John?
I saw Ghost World in the theater. Wow. I love Ghost
so
World.
So did I.
Thora Birch and who?
Steve Buscemi.
Yep.
Could you give me the names of their characters again, please?
It was Enid and Rebecca. Who played Rebecca?
Man.
No help here, bro.
Well, no, I'm not expecting your help. I'm just looking over here to see if you know, you've got the steal. You know, let's give it to Matt. Matt, you got the steal. I don't have the name.
Wow. Matt, chance for a steal here.
Scarlet Black Widow Johansson.
Oh, my God. Is it really Scarlett Johansson?
It sure was. Very early role for Scarlett Johansson.
Sure was. Matt, I thought you wouldn't know that at all.
I'm impressed. It's a comic book movie. Come on.
It's a great comic book movie.
Daniel Close, man.
I love it. And you know what? At my fundraiser awareness event, we have a Scarlett Johansson Black Widow poster.
Nice.
Wow.
Available. Yeah, sold out.
We are tied up 1-1, and question number 4 is over to Matt. In 2010's Ghost Rider, Ewan McGregor was the ghost writer for this British prime minister who was played by what actor? 2010's Ghost Rider, Ewan McGregor was the
Ghost Rider. It was Nick Cage. No, okay. Rescue Me Reno.
Rescue Me Reno.
Matt's
question number 4. Who played the British Prime Minister in Ghost Rider?
And your clue is, has played Bond.
Oh.
Wow, has played Bond.
Well, that's got to be either Pierce Brosnan or Daniel Craig at this point. I'll go with Daniel Craig. He's more relevant right now.
Ooh. Wow, chance for a steal here, John.
And the answer is Pierce Brosnan.
Damn it! I was 50-50 on that.
Great movie, isn't it, John?
It is a good flick. It's really an underrated movie, and not a lot of people have seen it, but it's a good movie.
Yeah,
I should have figured that Daniel Craig's too young to play a prime minister.
2-1, John. And question number 5 is over to John. This 2002 film starring Julianne Margulies is known for a scene in which a whole crew of people are sliced in half. This 2002 film starring Julianne Margulies is known for a scene in which a whole crew of people are sliced in half.
That just does not sound like a Julianne Margulies movie. 2002?
Sure.
2002. 2002, Julianne Margulies.
I'm chomping at the bit.
Big Lebowski.
You're thinking of Julianne Moore. I don't know what he's thinking.
All right, there you go.
Matt,
yeah.
Chance for a Julianne steal.
Margulies. Ghost Ship.
Julianne Margulies, that is a terrible movie.
Ghost Ship, but that scene is amazing.
All right, well, it is tied up at 2. I can't believe
it. It scares me that you know that.
Saw it in the theater, bro.
Tied up at 2. He's losing street cred quick, isn't he, John?
I like my horror.
Tied up at 2, question number 6 over
Ghost
to Matt.
Ship.
In 1996, Val Kilmer teamed up with Michael Douglas in this movie about two lions in Africa. Val Kilmer teamed up with Michael Douglas in a movie about two lions in Africa.
Whose question is this?
It's over to Matt.
I'm sorry.
Is it ghost acting careers? Wait. How about... what the hell is the name of the desert? It's Ghost of the Desert.
John, you got a chance for a steal here.
Yeah, and the sad thing is...
It's Val Kilmer, Michael Douglas.
I know I'm real close.
I know it's not Ghost of the Desert, because that's just silly. Just silly. I'm sorry, Matt. That's just silly.
I think I'm close.
I don't think so. I don't think you're anything like...
You got a chance for a steal here, John.
The Ghost in the Darkness?
The Ghost in the Darkness.
Wow. Ghost in the Darkness. 3-2, John. That was a big one right there. Question number 7 is over to John. He is winning 3-2. John, wow. It's a bonus question. First time ever, too. Bill Cosby played a widower in this 1990 film who just wanted to make sure his children are taken care of.
It's a fucking layup.
Hold on.
So, let's slow down. So first off, this is for the win. Second of all, it's a bonus question. I have no idea what that means.
Well, you just got to answer this question.
It starts with Bill Cosby? Come on, Rye, what are you doing to
me? You
got to
know this, man.
Get me a Jell-O pop. Here we go. Bill Cosby played a widower in this 1990 film who just wanted to take care of his, make sure his children were taken care of. What was the name of that movie? Anything?
Bill Cosby was in a movie?
Oh, man. This is embarrassing, John. This is a,
it's Leonard.
This is a slam dunk.
Leonard Five.
Ghost?
I
have no idea what movie Bill Cosby
really
was in.
Dude,
wow, no, Matt, you got a chance for a steal in the tie up.
Ghost Dad.
Is it animated?
No.
Oh, no, I don't know. I don't know.
Matt ties it up at three. Matt ties it up at three, but this is a bonus question. Who directed Ghost Dad?
Oh, who directed that? I know it. Robert Zemeckis.
The reason I brought this up, Sidney Poitier directed Ghost Dad. There you go. Little known jaw tidbit right there. It is tied up at three. Matt, you can win it outright with this question, or it comes down to a jawbreaker. Matt, in 1996, Alec Baldwin, James Woods, and Whoopi Goldberg starred in this civil rights drama.
Alec Baldwin.
James Woods and Whoopi Goldberg.
Mississippi Burning?
We're playing ghost movie trivia here.
Oh.
You got a chance for a steal. It was a civil rights drama, John.
What was the were the hints again?
In 1996, Alec Baldwin, James Woods, and Whoopi Goldberg starred in this civil rights drama.
Jeez, I just don't know.
Do you got a stab? You have one lifeline left.
No, he doesn't.
Wait.
Come on, dude. We're down to a tie. Wait,
to who? To Reno or you?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm going to take my lifeline.
All right, Reno. What's the lifeline for question number eight?
This is highly suspect. It's highly unusual.
And your clue is four I's, four S's, two P's.
I already said that word.
I believe Reno just said four I's, four S's, and two P's.
Mississippi.
John's looking into Reno's eyes.
Mississippi Mandala? Mississippi Ghost? Ghost Mississippi?
I can't give it to him. It was Ghosts of Mississippi.
Oh, this is not a movie that anyone's ever seen.
Oh, great film, great film. We are tied up. We are tied up, so it comes down to a jawbreaker. John, are you ready for it?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Better Ghost, Patrick Swayze in Ghost, or Bruce Willis in Sixth Sense?
Bruce Willis in Sixth Sense.
This one goes to Matt. I'm kidding.
What just happened? I'm leaving.
Hey, really quick. Here it is. Real jawbreaker. Age of Whoopi Goldberg, closest to.
Holy crap.
Matt, you go first. To her age.
Closest to her age.
Need quick answers.
64
here.
Years old.
Reno, can you lock Matt in at 64? What do you got? John?
61.
Got to give this one to John. She's only 56.
Ugh.
Well done, John.
And this is how we win it.
Lost.
I'm a little embarrassed that it's Whoopi Goldberg's age, which helps me win this. But I'm going to take the win. Thanks, Rye.
Hey, well done.
Reno?
Well done.
Thank you, Reno, as always.
Really quick. We've got to wrap it up here. We ran long. Great episode.
Yeah, totally. Always.
John
loved
keeps putting down his mic for some reason.
Loved
like he's
it.
Just done.
No, I loved it. It's always a good time, man. I always enjoy myself.
It's just the bourbon talking.
John, one more time, where the Jawheads listening at home can learn more about your new film?
They should check out officiallylimited.com, and we're also going to have an Officially Limited Facebook page. You should be able to find it pretty easily.
Just Google it.
Want to thank our sponsors, the new 400 Theaters.
Yeah. And MoviePass. Exciting things going on over there at MoviePass, so check them out.
And also thanks to the best producer in the biz, Steve Mrazek.
He really is. Thanks, Reno, you're the
thanks,
best.
Thanks, Reno.
Until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.